Philippians chapter 1. Verses 27 through 30. Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come to see you or remain absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. In no way alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and that too from God. For to you it has been granted, for Christ's sake, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, experiencing the same conflict which you saw in me and now hear to be in me. This prison epistle was written to a very important city, Philippi, named for Philip of Macedon, the father of Alexander the Great. It was the scene of Mark Antony's final defeat by the forces of Octavian. We know Octavian as Augustus Caesar, who was ruling when Jesus was born. And in 42 BC, the last gasp of opposition to Octavian took place here at historic Philippi. That is, the current emperor of the world won his throne at Philippi. It was a military colony with special privileges of citizenship. It was on the main road from between Rome and the east. It was on Main Street. You could not find any place in the empire that was any more important other than Rome itself than the city of Philippi. It was not the backwoods. It was an important place to live. The Philippian Christian lived where it was happening. And it was a good church. What a beginning. We read about the nucleus of the Philippian church in Acts chapter 16. Lydia was a member of it. One in that place which was probably a synagogue, the place of prayer down by the river. We don't know if the girl who had the spirit of divination cast from her became a Christian or not. We assume she did. She'd have made a good church member. The jailer in his household taught the Sunday school classes. Epaphroditus, Eudea, Syneke, Clement, all these names are connected with the church at Philippi, a grand church. We read about churches in the New Testament we're not so proud of, but we're proud of the Philippian church. It had supported Paul while he was in prison and was continuing to do so, and this Philippian letter embraces a thank you note. An important church in an important city. And Paul, in his imprisonment, writes to them, and of course the chapter opens up with his standard greeting, and then he goes on to tell in verses 13 and 14 how his imprisonment, though it might seem bad, was being used by God for good. And then in verse 19 he expresses his confidence that he will not spend forever in jail, his deliverance, in which, as far as we know, at the end of 2 years he was freed. And then in verses 21 and following he talks about his spirit in this trying time, how he is struggling in very bad circumstances to give of his best, to do the best that he can for Jesus, even though he's in a tough situation. And then between verses 26 and verse 27, we have an abrupt transition. And I hope I am not overinterpreting this when I try to pick up on the tone as well as the particulars of the text. When I see Paul abruptly, instantaneously go from his condition there in the prison in Rome, when he says, "I am hard pressed," in verse 23, and I realize that I'd like to just die and go on, but it's better for you if I remain in the flesh. I'm doing the best I can, I seem to hear him saying. And then in verse 27, he says, now, If I pick up on this tone, on the rhythm of this, he says, now, here I am where I am. I'm doing the best I can. And I want you, Philippian Christians, in that very important city, in that very good, important church, I want you to do the best you can where you are. And that's my message this morning. When I hear a preacher stand up to preach, before he's gone very far, I want him to tell me what he's getting at. And so I'm going to tell you what I'm getting at this morning. It's this, that we are to give of our best. That's our theme, is it not? Not just give of our best in the abstract as a high ideal, but we are to give of our best now, where we are, which happens to be here. You see, we are conditioned, our culture, and especially you who were raised on television more than some of us, that you are conditioned for the dramatic. And Paul's situation was dramatic. It's a dramatic thing to be in prison for the faith, is it not? And we often picture ourselves in that situation and wonder what we would do if we were in that situation, which would cause the pulse rate to rise and would give us a chance to do spectacular things for God and show our courage in ways that could not be mistaken. Oh, what a dramatic situation. Well, see, we think in terms of the dramatic. The television age has produced a generation of people who think that the only good life, the only true life, the only important situations are the dramatic situations, capsulized in 30-minute or 60-minute pieces. And we have lost our respect for the ordinary. And life was going on at its ordinary pace there at Philippi. It's going to heat up pretty soon. But for the time being, they were just ordinary Christians. But Paul was in jail. And he is saying, I think, look, I am doing my best in this dramatic situation, but you do your best in your ordinary situation. And this generation also is conditioned away from the present into the future. You realize there was no such word as teenager until it was first used in England just before the First World War? This idea that the teen years, that this is time out. It's a time when we are not really living our life, when the years don't really count, because real life, important life, will be in the future. So it doesn't matter what I do now. What I do now is not important. It will become important when I reach the age of 20. And so we, especially you, are conditioned away from the ordinary, to the dramatic, away from the present, and to the future. And so we are, without being aware of it, conditioned to think, I will do my best, yes. I will be that kind of servant I dream about, but not in now, then. Not in these ordinary circumstances, sometime in the future, when I finish up, when I get away from now to then, and when I get away from the ordinary to some dramatic pulpit situation in which I picture myself, some important ministry, some dangerous mission field, then my life will really begin. Then it will become important. And I'm here to teach as best I can that if we're going to give our best, we must give our best now. And we must give our best where we are, which is here. And so in this, when he makes this transition, he, after having talked about his own spirit in his own condition, he says, only conduct yourselves, verse 27, where I began this morning, only conduct yourselves, you see, in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. I hear him saying, it's tough where I am, and I'm trying to conduct myself in a manner worthy of Christ, not to humiliate him. But you, where you are, you conduct yourself worthy of the gospel. And so the first thing I would say is that if we are going to live an important Christian life, if our discipleship is going to be the best, it must be it here and now, and we must give of our best because he is the best. You see, Jesus is either the best or he's nothing. And we must do our best, fellas and ladies, or hand in our commission. Quality is the watchword of the hour. Quality is the business of the Christian. I suggest to you that the most critical decisions you will make in the next few weeks will not likely be monumental decisions between great and good, between great good as opposed to great evil. But the definitive decisions, that is those which define you and me, will be 100 small choices between what's quality and what's cheap. And I love this recurring theme in the writings of Paul. Walk worthy. Ephesians 4 starts out that walk worthy of your calling. If you wear the name, give your best. Why? Because he's the best. You see, it is not in the great choices or it is seldom in the great choices between great evil and obvious good that our life becomes what it is. It is in these small choices between what's good and what's best, or what's cheap and what's quality. It is here that we make it or don't make it. And I despise the modern spirit which raises the question, is the gospel important enough for me to give my life to it? Which has it backwards. I would invoke the spirit of Jeremiah, who says, am I important enough to preach the gospel? Am I worthy of the gospel? And he decided he wasn't, and God agreed. But when we say to God, God, we're not worthy to preach the gospel, he said, that's right, you're not, but you're all I got. So you're going to have to give your best. I am not worthy to preach the gospel. We are not. But since God has chosen us, and since he has chosen to use such obviously earthen vessels, we must give it our best because of him whose gospel we preached. We must walk worthy. Give our best. Do our best. We must walk worthy who we are, no matter who we are. Do not say, because I'm ordinary, I owe nothing but mediocre discipleship. Remember the parable of the talents? Every man was responsible for what he had. I don't know if you think you're ordinary or not, and that's another matter. But even if you think you are, that is no excuse for ordinary discipleship. It matters not who you think you are. You are to give your best, whatever that best might be, right now, where you are, which is here. We must give our best because he is the best. We must stand firm. Verse 27 says, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, whether I get out of jail or not, I may hear that you are standing firm in one spirit. Standing firm. Paul had to stand firm where he was in that dramatic situation. The Philippians had to stand firm where they were in the ordinary situation. You see, we cannot say, well, if I were in jail for my faith, you just watch and see how firm I would stand. But will you stand firm here? And now, what does stand firm mean in our ordinary situation? Here at Florida Christian College now, it means stick it out. It means get it done. It means hang in there. It means do not run. I cannot speak on this subject very often without bringing up the name of one of my favorite characters of ancient history. I love him. Obscure fellow. His name is Sophonides. We meet him in the last part of the book of Herodotus. I think I've told some of you about him before. The new ones need to hear about Sophonides. You need to learn that name. He's the fellow who showed up at the Battle of Plataea. He was a Greek. He was fighting the Persians. And he wanted to make sure that his home city was not ashamed of him. And he wasn't too sure of himself. He's an ordinary fellow. So he tied an anchor to his belt, an iron anchor with a bronze chain. Big heavy anchor. He lugged it into battle. And so he carried this huge anchor to where the battle was the thickest, threw out the anchor, then he had to fight. He wanted a guarantee against his own cowardice. And so that's the way he fought that battle. He looked around where the battle was the thickest, carried his anchor to it, threw out his anchor, and then fought for survival and did great. And if the battle line shifted, he hauled in his anchor, lugged it up, and threw it out again. I told you that story so I could tell you this. This is the place where your anchor is. Now, I don't know what you're going to be doing when you get out of school. I don't know what you're going to be doing this summer, but I know that. I know this. Here is where you are now. And if you're not going to fight it out here, if you're not going to stand firm here, don't say, well, I'll stand firm then. No. We throw out our anchor. And by the way, our faith promise is an anchor, isn't it? We've thrown it out, and now we're going to make it work. We're going to pay it. We've made a commitment. I love men who stand firm. I'll tell you, it means a lot. This is the place. We have chosen Florida Christian College to fight the spiritual battle this year, today, now, this hour. This is the place, our battlefield. We have chosen to be here. We must not only stand firm, we must stand together. He says, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel, that whether I come or don't come, I'll see that you stand firm in one spirit. with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Did you get that? One spirit, one mind, standing together, striving together. We only do our best when we do it together. The Church of Christ is not the church of the Lone Ranger. We stand together or we don't stand at all. That's the nature of it. This is sound theology. With the same force and intensity and reality that I was baptized into a relationship with God through Christ, I was at that moment baptized into a relationship with you and you with me. It is called koinonia, fellowship. We stand together. I've been in this Bible college business this is my 13th year, and I've seen the students come and go. I've seen them, the thinkers, the strong academic minds, but who have weak spirits. They pass all the tests, but the most important ones. I've seen the stinkers who mess up everything they touch. They use and hurt and disappoint everyone in their world, and everybody's sorry they came. Not many stinkers, not many thinkers, a few. Joining the thinkers and the stinkers are the winkers. They're the cool sophisticates. They care about nothing. They never get happy, and they never get mad. They're with it, cynical, prayerless, useless. And coming behind them are the blinkers. They meet every challenge with cowardly confusion. Their word is, "What's that?" And who, me? And joining the thinkers and the stinkers and the winkers and the blinkers are the tinkers. They dabble in this, try that, a little bit of work here, a little something for Jesus there, busy, busy, on the move, accomplishing nothing. And then come the slinkers, the hypocrites, who have no idea what it is to live honestly for God and before God. They smile at the professors and slither around in their dirty, self-serving business for a little while and are seen no more, having caused great trouble to the Student Life Committee and having fooled no one. Not many of those, but any is too many. We have more of the next kind, the rinky-dinkers. Anything will do. Shovel the snow. Slipshod, third rate. Do enough to barely pass. That's good enough. Mediocre people with discounted spirits who live out their cut-rate days in the bargain basement worshiping their patron saint, Mickey Mouse. Thinkers and the stinkers and the winkers and the blinkers and the tinkers and the slinkers and the rinky-dinkers. That's the minority. Most students, and I love them, are the linkers. They say, "Here I am, and these are my fellow Christians, these are my friends. I'm going to be living and working with them for 4 years with all their imperfections. I will link my soul to theirs, and we'll be a family, and together we'll serve Jesus here. Now, together." Paul calls upon us to be linkers, stand firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Listen, students, we professors feel very strongly that you're a part of our family, and we don't ever to let you down. And we don't want you to let each other down. And if we're going to stand firm, it's going to be together. And so what has he said? He said, "Here I am in jail, and there you are in Philippi. I want you to walk worthy. Do your best. I want you to stand firm, and I want you to stand together. And I want you to stand unafraid. In no way, verse 28, alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and that too from God." What does that mean? Strange language. Stand unafraid. You see, this epistle could have been written the other way. Isn't it strange? You got a fellow in jail writing to people who aren't, saying, "Don't be afraid." If I were going to make this up, if I were writing this scene, it would be the other way around. If I had a friend in jail, I'd write to him and say, "Now, don't be afraid." To stand unafraid. We are in a battle, as our song service has suggested this morning. And look what he says. The very act of your standing together, in no way alarmed by your opponents, verse 28. Which what? The act and the fact of not being afraid does what? Creates a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and that too from God. Whatever else this means, I understand it to mean that when we stand unafraid, that the issues become clear. And the issues never become clear until we do stand unafraid. The battle lines are never drawn until we choose up sides and say, here I stand and I'm not moving. As I said before, we stand firm, but also not simply firm, but unafraid. And it's true, the issues, the battle can never be won for the faith until the issues are clear. And the issues will never be clear unless we stand unafraid. And once you do that, it's fun to talk about. It's not always fun to do. Last Saturday morning, we had our senior youth group at Winter Park, First Christian Winter Park, out picketing the abortion mill up on Lee Road and saving lives, by the way. It's a proven fact that whenever people picket, there are fewer abortions. And Leslie was up there with us. And it was the first time for some of those kids. And I'll tell you, there was a look in their eye that I hadn't seen before. Why? The issues, it suddenly became very clear what the issues were. Why? Well, the hard, stony looks from the abortion mill itself, the sheepish looks of those who were going in to kill their unborn, and those who came by let us know very clearly that the issues were there. The honking, some would honk and give us thumbs up, and some would honk and give us thumbs down. Some gave us right on, some gave us the victory sign, some gave us half of it. One lady slowed down and tried to preach a sermon on the freedom of choice. She didn't have the courage to stop and really say what she had to say. And I think it did something for those young people to stand unafraid. And that's where we belong. I think we've had enough hot dog and fun get-togethers. Nothing wrong with that. But it's time to get out where the battle is. One of my goals is to get the modern church out of its building where it's safe, out on the lines where the battle is. I think we could do with one last weenie roast. See what I'm saying? And get down to business. We're to stand unafraid. Paul is in prison. The Philippians are not. But different situations require different kinds of courage. But every place requires some courage. Did you get that? Different situations require different kinds of courage. When you finish up your work here and leave, or when you get out of the classroom and go to wherever your place of service is, it requires a different kind of courage in a different place. But every place does require courage. This is Christianity, people. This is Christianity. Cowards need not apply. As I've said a number of times, we need no more cowards in the pulpit. All those jobs are taken. We have our quota of cowards in the pulpit. And if you're a coward, don't go into the pulpit. Go do something where we can't see you. Get away from us. We don't need cowards. But do not say that I will stand with courage then, if you do not stand with courage now, here and now. It takes a particular kind of courage to make it here at Florida Christian College. What is the enemy? The enemy sometimes is poverty. I'll tell you, that will make your soul shake, won't it? And you can't pay your bills. It makes us afraid. The worries at home cause us to be afraid, some of us. The assignment load. That's a fearful thing, is it not? Our own poor training or lack of discipline makes cowards of us. The doubts as to the value of what we're doing here. Do I really belong here? Is this really important enough for what I'm going through? Do I really want to be here? We run scared before our doubts. As one man has said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. The very workload, the very hours that we put in, the fear of Christian service. Some of us, for the first time in our lives, are doing real Christian service, and we're afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed of being afraid. If you weren't afraid, it would take no courage. I understand. I remember what it was like to go calling and hoping nobody was there. And and thanking God for a pulpit because they couldn't see your knees shake. There's nothing wrong with being afraid, but there's something wrong with quitting. Here we are. This is the place. We must live courageously now. We must give of our best, even though we're afraid of finding out what that means. And so, Paul exhorts us in our ordinary situation, now, to give of our best and to stand firm and to stand together and to stand unafraid. The prisoner writes to the Philippians that they also have been given the gift of faith and the gift of suffering. For to you has been granted for Christ's sake not only to believe in him, faith, but to suffer for his sake. Just like me, he says. This is I'm doing, experiencing the same conflict which you saw in me and now here to be in me. The Philippian Christians, because they had been given the gift of suffering as well as the gift of faith, there in that important city, in that important church, who they were, where they were to walk worthy of their calling, to do their best. And here we are. We are in an important area. We are in an important state. This is an important school. What you are learning here is important. You are doing and preparing to do important things. This is our battlefield, here, now. We must give of our best, here, and now.